Quality proteins aren't just for special occasions. With Omaha Steaks, you get mouth-watering proteins delivered right to your door, individually packaged and portioned, so a great dinner is just minutes away. From Taco Tuesday to a weekend feast, taste the Omaha Steaks difference. Start getting flavorful proteins delivered today. Visit omahasteaks.com and get $35 off with promo code AUDIO at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, code AUDIO. Terms apply. See site for details.
I know how intimidating beekeeping can be, especially in those first couple of years, and not knowing what you need, what to do, or where to find help can be downright scary. That's why I created the AI-assisted Beekeeping for Newbies mobile app to be right there with you as you start your beekeeping journey. Loaded up with checklists, guides, and one of my favorites, a bunch of queen bee photos to help you get better at locating them during inspections. I created this app to provide you with a single source to help jumpstart your learning and make you a better beekeeper. Go to studio.com/beekeeper. That's studio.com/beekeeper to take advantage of a limited time 20% off launch special. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. It is, let's see, we're talking about mid to late February now. There's a whole lot going on, a lot of exciting news, lots of cool things for the bee business, the apiary, personally, a little bit of a public service announcement on U.S. Postal Service that might be important to some of you. We're going to talk about hive placements and angles. Definitely want to cover some more about frames. I know we touched on it in the last episode, but there's a couple things I know that I missed, and I definitely want to make sure we talk about them. Also, I think we're getting to the point now where it's almost springtime, so we want to start thinking about some of the things we should keep in mind around inspecting the hives, time frames, and things like that. So we'll jump into that. We'll also talk about pests and pest management, why it's so important. Just, you know, staying on top of things in general, right? So I've got a big list of things here. I am pretty sure with a fairly high degree of confidence here that we're not going to get through them all in this episode. What my plan is right now, since I have such an exhaustive, extensive kind of list, what I'd like to do is just keep rolling through. When I get to a good break point, we'll stop and then we'll just pick up in the next episode and keep rolling through everything. You may or may not have heard of a company called FlowHive. FlowHive, the concept here, the idea, it's really pretty cool. It's not something that scales very well for a commercial beekeeper, but for like a recreational hobbyist beekeeper, it's actually really, really cool. It's expensive. It's pretty pricey. But the thing with FlowHive is you basically, and I'm not an expert here, so if I get it wrong, take it with a grain of salt. But the concept is, you know, you essentially would have a hive body with your bees in it, and then you would be replacing your honey supers with these FlowHive honey supers. And then, you know, as the bees go in and they draw out the comb and they do their thing, they fill them up with honey. Instead of you removing the hive body, removing the frames, extracting all the honey, and then, you know, bottling and going through that whole process, you basically walk up with, you know, a handful of jars or little bear jars or whatever you want to use. You crack the nozzle on the end of it or whatever the, you know, like I always have this vision in my mind, like an iced tea canister, like a sun tea thing where you open it up and your tea comes out. Same kind of concept. You walk up with a honey jar, pop it open, and you're literally flowing honey right into the jar. For those of you who have not had to extract honey or had the joy of doing honey extraction yet, this is life-changing. It's completely different, and it's amazing because, extracting honey, if you're one person with one or two colonies, it's a lot of work. And the recommendation really is join a bee club, and then they will typically have, you know, one or multiple extractors, and they have extraction day. And everybody shows up. They all pitch in, you know, and they decap, you know, spin and extract and bottle and do whatever they got to do. Everybody helps clean up and you go on about your way. That's kind of my recommendation. But if you want to have something on your own, FlowHive is actually really, really pretty cool. I reached out to FlowHive recently and I said, this is the primary reason that I'm actually bringing this up at all is because I was on YouTube. I was watching some videos and I came across an advertisement for FlowHive. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. Let me go ahead and watch the rest of this ad. And it's the actual company FlowHive. And they're showing their video and they're showing how their product works and, you know, all these cool things. The link inside of it was not their link. Like, I went down and I looked at the link. I'm like, why wouldn't it go to like flowhive.com? It was some other off the wall link. So I paused it, copied the link, threw it in a different browser, and I went to it. And they were selling, they were quote unquote selling Flowhive for like $80. Whatever it was dirt cheap. And I'm like, this is definitely not right. So I'm digging around and I find something on the bottom about us somewhere buried in the site where it was like, you know, whatever, Atlantic Medical Company. It had some kind of like off the wall name for the company. And I realized what was going on here is somehow some fake entity is basically making it look like they've got this great deal on Flowhive, and all that they're doing is stealing your information. So you could just tell. You just go through the site and look around. It was 100% grab at your info. So your name, address, phone number, credit card info, 100% scam. You could tell by how dirt cheap the pricing was. So I reached out to the folks at Flowhive. I let them know about it. They responded. You know, we had a good dialogue for a couple of days about the whole thing. But anyway, long story short, if you like Flowhive, it has its place. I think it's a good fit for some people. But just pay attention to those kind of things, because these scammers out there have a pretty convincing kind of thing going. The next thing I wanted to jump into is talking about U.S. Postal Service and some of the delays they're having this year. But the more important thing as it relates to beekeeping and package bees. If you've never had package bees come in before, I've done it several times and it's always a fun new experience every time. When I would first do it years ago, I would get, you know, one or two packages at a time. My local postal carrier would just knock on the door and say, hey, man, got some things for you out in the truck. And then I had to go out and bring them in. And then I've had times where they call and say, hey, your bees are here, come get them. And then I've said, well, I paid you to deliver them. How about you guys deliver them? And they said, well, we don't have anybody who's willing to deliver them. They're afraid they're going to get stung. And I'm like, okay, well, am I getting a rebate at all on this? Because I paid for delivery. You know, I kind of gave them a little bit of a hard time, but normally I would go over and pick them up. So you're probably either going to get a carrier that'll deliver them. You might get, you know, you might have to go pick them up. And there's a couple of different ways that might go down. Once the package bees get to the post office, the worst is generally over. What you do have to watch out for is sometimes in the spring, you get those days where it's just, oh my God, it's been beautiful for like 2 weeks. It's in the 70s. And then you have that spell that kicks in where it's like 38 for 5 days. Now, for me, that tends to be like the week that I get my bees. It seems like whenever I did anything with package bees, the timing was always really bad on that. But ideally, you want to get them and get to work with them pretty quickly. I think the general rule that they tell you is you don't want to have more than an inch of dead bees at the bottom of the package. But it's a pretty lengthy explanation around package bees. They're kind of a pain in the butt. But again, it's a necessary evil in some cases. So the real point that I wanted to get at with the package bees, though, is typically when you pay for shipping or when whoever you buy them from, they will have insurance baked into the deal, right? You're going to have shipping and insurance going to be included. You see the bees, you go to the postal office, you see the bees, you look at them, you're like, oh my God, most of them are dead. No, I'm going to refuse delivery. And then you have to go through the insurance process of getting things recovered and replaced. That's just kind of the way that it's always been. And I've never had to reject any before. I know it's happened. I know sometimes they've been shipped in and, you know, been exposed to too much heat, too much cool, different things have happened. I've been fortunate, never had an issue. But what I've been told this year, particularly from some of the apiaries I've spoken with down in Georgia, is they will still ship U.S. Postal Service if you want. But you're basically waiving that insurance because of the delays. Like, we had a card come to our house that was postmarked December 6th, and it got here like, it was a Christmas card. It got here like January 15th, right? I don't know what's going on with the Postal Service, but if you are planning to have package bees shipped in this year, you may want to get on the phone, have a discussion, have some dialogue with your apiary that's providing your package bees well in advance to see what's going on. Because like I said, and things may have changed, you know, this is kind of a ever evolving thing with the Postal Service, but make sure that if those package bees are being shipped to you, make sure that the insurance is still intact and that you still are covered for that. Because if you're not, I wouldn't do it. I would get a refund, have them pushed to a different year, you know, whatever you can do, because that's just not good. Okay, so next topic here I wanted to jump into is hive placement. And I think we talked about, or I should say hive placement and hive stands. I think if I look, we look back to the one of the earlier discussions that we had, I kind of glossed over a little bit, touched on it very briefly. But when you're setting up your hives, try not to overthink it. When you're putting, you know, when you're figuring out where you want to place your colonies, I can tell you that a couple basic rules that I've used that have worked well for me, I'll kind of lay those out for you. But the things that you don't want to do are probably more important than the things that you are going to do. And what I mean by that is, you don't want to set them flat on the ground. You want to get them up off the ground. You don't want to have them placed in a position where, for example, if they're level or they're even angled backwards. So you have the entrance angled backwards. What happens is when it rains, the water and the moisture will hit that entrance and roll to the back of the hive, and it kind of sits there. So as the bees are doing their cleanup and maintenance and things are falling, you know, from the frames down to the bottom of the hive or the bottom to the bottom board, it mixes in with that water and it creates this gooey, microbial, kind of funky environment. There are some bees I found that regardless of what's going on in there, they figure it out. They find a way to keep things clean, keep things nice. I cannot tell you how many colonies I've seen where, for whatever reason, they were not angled. I always slope mine forward. I basically make the back of the colony on my bottom board. I'll raise that bottom board up about 3/4 of an inch to 1 inch to make sure that it has a nice slant forward so that those things don't kind of coagulate in the back of the bottom board. Like I said, I've seen some pretty funky things that get in there and they kind of grow in there, and it's just icky. So you want to keep that moisture rolling out the front door. But for the stands themselves, I mean, you're limited by your imagination. I have put them on cinder blocks. I've taken two cinder blocks, put a bottom board in the cinder block and put my colony right on top of that. I've put two cinder blocks on the left, two cinder blocks on the right, put some 4x4s across them, and stacked 6 or 8 across on 4x4s. I've used pallets. I've used pieces of wood that like literally are just laying around. If I have a piece of like an old piece of 2x6 or whatever, I'll put it down across a couple of blocks or, you know, wooden blocks, rocks, whatever. You want it to be secure. You don't want it to blow over. You know, you don't want it to be in a position where if you accidentally bump something, it's going to fall, right? But don't get wrapped up in perfection. When I first started, I remember, you know, I had these stands and they were very kind of purpose built. You know, I built them myself, you know, with 2x4s, but they were all the same size, and I cut everything and measured, and, you know, it was all nice and perfect. And that was cool. It was nice. You know, they were about 14, 16 inches off the ground. I could get underneath of it. I could, you know, use the weed eater, because that's an important thing. You basically don't want to give a good, easy opportunity for things that are going to be down in the grass at the ground level to be crawling up and getting into it. You know, I recommend, you know, at least maybe, you know, 6-8 inches off the ground. Just give yourself enough room so you can get a weed eater under there and keep it nice and trim. There's other things too. Some people will put like a solution, a non-chemical kind of solution that's maybe like a, you know, vinegar, lemon juice or whatever kind of thing around the hives to kill off the vegetation without being toxic at all. You definitely don't want to put any kind of toxins anywhere near your colonies. But keeping that grass down helps to keep things from kind of getting in and gives a nice clear path for the bees to come in and out. That's really the important stuff. Keeping it clear, keeping it open, and just making it more difficult in general for, like I said, for things to walk up, crawl up, whatever, off the ground and go directly into the hive. I've still got a bunch of other stuff I want to talk about. What I'm going to go ahead and do is just take a little break and kind of get some things teed up here for kind of episode 2, kind of the continuation of this one, the part B, if you will. And we'll keep things moving forward and rolling along. So I will sign off and I will talk to you again here real shortly. I know how intimidating beekeeping can be, especially in those first couple of years, and not knowing what you need, what to do, or where to find help can be downright scary. That's why I created the AI-assisted Beekeeping for Newbies mobile app to be right there with you as you start your beekeeping journey. Loaded up with checklists, guides, and one of my favorites, a bunch of queen bee photos to help you get better at locating them during inspections. I created this app to provide you with a single source to help jumpstart your learning and make you a better beekeeper. Go to studio.com/beekeeper. That's studio.com/beekeeper to take advantage of a limited time 20% off launch special.